Hey David,
Yes, Rachel.
what did Luke say when he found out that Darth Vader was his father?
I don't know what.
Oh, Sith. Welcome to Wizards and Spaceships, the podcast that's about both wizards and spaceships.
It's a great name for it, isn't
It is. It is. It took us a while to come up with it.
Yeah, and I am David L. Klink.
And I'm Rachel A. Rosen. So we're both neighbors. We live across the street from each other. And last summer, we started hanging out in the backyard with a couple beers and sharing some recommendations about our favorite sci-fi, fantasy, and horror. We did some book exchanges. We talked for a number of hours and figured that some people might share our love of science fiction, fantasy, and horror as well, and might be actually interested in what we had to say.
Yeah, and we're also big fans of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Yeah, absolutely, devoted fans. And even though we have a pretty wide diversity of tastes and backgrounds, the thing that we both have in common is that we love things that don't happen in reality.
Yeah, because the more different and weird and strange and unusual, there's just new ways of doing and saying things.
Yeah, so this episode is an introduction to the show, what we like, why we like it, and why genre nerds shouldn't be too close-minded about what they read.
Yeah, and part of what we thought, since it's an introduction, that future episodes will probably deal with one topic and get into it in a bigger way. But we thought, why not just talk about what our likes and dislikes and why, just to give the audience a chance to understand a bit about us and who we are and what we're about. So I guess I'm up first. And one of the things that I like is anything that moves me. So I have a list here, things like Flowers for Algernon, The Cold Equations, The Monkey's Paw, The Chronicles of Narnia. I want stories that move me, that leave me in a puddle of tears. I want to be changed after reading the story or poem or whatever it is. I don't want to read something and just think, what was the point? Or I just lost all that time. Part of it is about how great things like science fiction, fantasy, and horror are for those people who care. There's a lot of people that don't. And for me, there was episode 200 of Stargate. At the very end of the episode, one of the characters quotes from Isaac Asimov. And whenever I watch that episode, I always tear up at the end because I think this is what science fiction is about.
Science fiction is an existential metaphor. It allows us to tell stories about the human condition. Isaac Asimov once said, individual science fiction stories may seem as trivial as ever to the blinder critics and philosophers of today. But the core of science fiction, its essence, has become crucial to our salvation if we are to be saved at all.
And there you go. A couple other things, why genre is so important, why we're drawn to it, why we write it. Anything where I become invested with what is presented. So I want to believe in the world. I want to care about the characters. I want to hate some characters. I want to love others. I want to feel how they feel. I want to go on a journey with them. I want to shake Eddard Stark and tell him to take over after the king dies, because what is going on there? Sometimes you feel so frustrated, but that's a good thing because then you're feeling it.
Yeah, I love a wrong genre protagonist, where Eddard Stark, he thinks he's in the kind of fantasy novel that existed before Game of Thrones came out, where the good guy hero gets to win by being noble and pure. And unfortunately, he found himself at the beginning of the grimdark fantasy trend and was completely unprepared for what he found there.
Yeah, and it's interesting, even early, that we won't get into this much more because I want to hear what your thoughts and feelings are of the genre. But certainly with him, it's very clear early on in the Game of Thrones that you either win it or you die. So if
Yeah,
those
but
are the stakes.
he thought it didn't apply to him. So
Yeah. Well,
from
Rachel, what are your likes and dislikes and stuff?
the very beginning when I got into it, I liked the idea that themes and then the speculative element of the story kind of reinforce each other. So whatever the magic or the new technology or the creeping horror that's happening in the story isn't just cool magic technology or creeping horror, but something that's telling us something about the world, our humanity, and the story, which is a kind of big abstract thing to like. So have examples. Dead Collections by Isaac Fellman is about the trans experience. It's about the disability experience, but it's also very much within the realm of speculative fiction. So the main character is a vampire, but he's also a trans man. And vampirism isn't a metaphor for being trans because he's also literally trans, but it's this funhouse mirror, and the story's examining dysphoria, chronic illness, this fear of dependence on others for your continued survival, and the sense of being frozen in that certain part of your life that you want to get out of, which is something that happens in kind of queer sexuality and also happens in vampire stories. So you've got the weird horror element, but you also have something that is very true and authentic to many people's lives. Another one is Prophet by Helen MacDonald and Sim Blaché, which I just finished reading. I don't want to give too much away because I want everybody to read this book. I've become a bit evangelical about it. But the central cool technology is this weapon that kills you through your most sentimental memories. And there's this really exciting military sci-fi plot. But this device is also used to bring this depth to the characters, explore their traumas, their connection to each other. And then eventually you find out why this weapon exists and what it's for. And then it adds just another layer of depth to the story. So that's one thing. Another thing that I like is specificity of character. So I don't like generic blank slate characters. I want to see how the speculative changes to the world, whether it's magic or scientific or occult, how they would actually change people. How are the people the products of their environment, but still recognizably us? I really like stories about weird little guys who make mistakes and are messy and flawed and unreliable. A good example is The Magicians by Lev Grossman. The book, not the show. I hate the show, but a lot of sci-fi fantasy writers didn't like the books because they're really about what happens when you drop these depressed literary fiction characters into a magic school portal fantasy. And the result is that they're not very likable, and they had to tone it down for the show, which is why I'm less of a fan of that. And then the third thing is the world as it is and isn't. So I love utopias, dystopias, moments of rupture, immersive universes, and the kind of stories that you can tell, that you can only tell when the world is fundamentally different in a particular way. One example is Ada Palmer's Terra Ignota, which starts off with this really simple concept. So there's one change to the world, which is that transportation exists that can circumnavigate the globe in 8 minutes. Then there's a bunch of religious wars that follow that. And once you can do that, there's no room for nation states. So people get organized based on this voluntary association. So you have this peace and prosperity, but it's a mess. It's a delicate balance. You have these complicated Baroque political maneuverings that are the only thing that are stopping the utopia from devolving into war. And the characters just, they're really different than us. They have these different ideas about gender, ideology, family, community. The story raises these really interesting ideas, but it's never prescriptive or didactic. I couldn't tell if she likes this world better than ours. I think she does. But it's not about that. It's about just how these technological and ideological changes change who we are.
Well, we certainly like our science fiction and fantasy, and the more different or dynamic it is, so you want something that's memorable. Yeah, one of the things that we were talking about is kind of a fun thing is the idea of what works and what doesn't, and in some cases there are knocks against certain kinds of things. Like with wizards and spaceships, we're trying to say that they're not as different as people let on, and that there's good in both, and that we shouldn't be any snobbery. There shouldn't be someone who looks down on fantasy or someone who doesn't care for science fiction. So we sort of put together a few things that might be knocks or things that, like in science fiction, the techno geek.
Computer, release a localized oneirogenic pentrane mist into the containment pen.
I have a quote here that says, we could scan the quantum fissure using a subspace differential pulse.
Is that real? Did that really happen?
Yeah, it's from Memory Alpha, which is a wonderful site that has a lot. It's a wiki and it has a lot of stuff to do with Star Trek. They have a whole section on technobabble. It's amazing what they come up with. Oh, the info dump is the second thing. And info dumps can actually exist, just not within science fiction, but also in all the genres. And I think you had an example of where it actually works.
I think it gets a bad rap. I have to play devil's advocate here and say that a really good info dump is priceless. And of course, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy is the classic example. It is, by weight, almost all info dumps. But the thing is that they are so funny that you just go along with it. For a more contemporary example, Catherine and Valenti's space opera, which is fabulous and very much in the spirit of Douglas Adams. Here's a quote from that. It's highly unlikely that each and every one of the million billion events that led to life here could ever occur again anywhere else. It's all just happy coincidence, darling. Call it fate if you're feeling romantic. Call it luck. Call it God. Enjoy the coffee in Italy, the sausage in Chicago, and the day-old ham sandwiches at Los Alamos National Laboratory, because this is as good as high-end luxury multicellular living gets. She goes on at great length about the origin of life and Fermi's paradox and, you know, just how she set up her multi-galactic universe. And there is a lot of info dumping, but that voice, that's such a good voice. She's so funny that it works for me.
Yeah, it felt almost like a bit of almost a Douglas Adams kind of thing. Now, I've added a couple lines, sort of shorter quotes after that, which is she had presented what you had just said, but that was just playing the devil's advocate herself because she doesn't believe that it's rare. And in fact, she goes on to say the rare earth hypothesis means well, but it's colossally, spectacularly, gloriously wrong. Life isn't difficult. It isn't picky. It isn't unique. And fate doesn't enter into the thing. Life wants to happen. It can't stand not happening. And that's so well written and so well said. And I can't disagree with it. Life does want to happen, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. And you can imagine somebody giving that same background information in a way that is completely dry. But what makes it for me is just, it is so beautifully and hilariously written.
Absolutely. If we want to go into some knocks against fantasy.
Yeah, let's trash fantasy here.
For me, in some cases, there isn't as much logic as in science fiction, even though you can obviously find issues with science fiction and the logic it has. For example, maybe a wizard uses some amazing spell at the end of a book, but you think, okay, well, did they not know that one earlier? Could they have used it earlier?
Yes. So here's your first opportunity to, if you're playing along at home, make a Wizards and Spaceships drinking game, because I'm going to recommend a China Mievel book. Unlun Dun has this fantastic variation on this particular problem. I don't want to spoil it because you can easily read the book in an afternoon. But why do the quest in order is a really fundamental question of that story. I prefer magic when it doesn't have logic. Otherwise, why isn't it science fiction? I came across a quote where somebody was describing, you know, you can cast a spell by throwing a tooth down an old well in the forest clearing, and how that feels more interesting than consume mana, cast fireball, run out of mana, you can no longer do a spell. Until you're at the climax and then you try really hard and then you can do the spell because it was in you all along. So for me, I'm very much a soft magic person, if you're going to make that distinction, because for me, that's what makes it magic.
Now, one question I've got for you, Rachel, and I loved your answer is, does every freaking fantasy book have to be part of a series?
Yes. I say this because my debut was the book one of the Sleep of Reason trilogy, and I have set myself up for a mighty task ahead of me.
Yeah, even in science fiction they even have like Dune was originally that one big book, and then they had two more, so it was a trilogy. And then somehow there was a fourth, God Emperor of Dune. There was Heretics. There was all these Dune books. Eventually, it was Thulsa Dune and How You Dune and Dune Buggy, or maybe those are made up titles. But even science fiction, in some cases, has the series as well.
I mean, you gotta love a series that's that people love so much that it outlives its author.
Yeah. And part of what we're trying to understand or get to about wizards and spaceships, because we're combining these two things. I mean, you also throw in horror and other genre things and so on, and dystopias and what have you. But the idea is that there's good stuff in each one. I've been more of a science fiction person all my life, but it's weird because in the other podcast I do, the Two Old Farts Talk Sci-Fi, we talk about things like what is your favorite episode, what's your favorite not, what's your favorite, so on. And for me, my favorite actual episode on TV that was science fiction, fantasy, or horror happened to be a fantasy one. It's from Buffy the Vampire Slayer, an episode called Hush. There's really good stuff within each genre. You just have to find it. If you're someone who's a snob and doesn't like that, well, guess what? There is good stuff in it.
I love Hush. I think it's a fantastic episode. It's probably the episode of Buffy that I've seen the most.
I mean, Hush. I mean, how it is so far ahead of everything. Like, the monsters that show up at the beginning are just so brilliant and so scary. And then the scene in the classroom where they cannot speak because that's the power of the things. And they're trying to explain how are they going to kill it. Is one of the funniest scenes, like the whole thing where she's saying, well, let's stab it, but I don't want to get into details of exactly what happens there. Just every little bit of that episode is quite right up until the end, which is just stunning. It's an amazing. Yeah.
It's I'd say it's one of the most perfect episodes of TV ever.
Let's talk about horror for a minute, which is, you know, almost every genre, it's changed now because it's just been so much great stuff over the last 10, 20 years. It's just amazing the level of its acceptance now. But for many years, it was sort of looked down on as sort of more like slasher or gimmicky or jump scare. I love the movie Scream. I'm not sure if, you know, the whole thing where it plays against the types.
I've seen one of the Screams. I'm not sure which Scream it was, but I've seen one of them.
Yeah, the first one is really great because it talks about, you know, there's a phone call and they play against it. Well, I'm going to go to the kitchen. Well, obviously someone's going to attack me there. You know, that whole thing. They have a lot of fun. Also Cabin in the Woods and things like that. So I think horror has grown up, I think, a bit. There's various excellent films that you could consider horror or have horror aspect to it, like Parasite, A Quiet Place, Get Out, The Sixth Sense, The Shape of Water, that have horror elements in it that I think are very strong.
Yeah, I'm less of a horror fan. I thought Get Out was brilliant, and I thought it was terrifying. And then I watched it with some horror fans, and they were like, what are you talking about? That's not scary at all. I used to love horror as a kid, but I've gotten a lot more squeamish in my old age. For me, it's like the jump scares and the gore. I'm not a big fan of either of those things. I have no problem reading horror, though. If I read something on a page, I don't get queasy, but if I'm watching it, it depends. My big knock against modern horror, though, is that all of the camp has gone out of it. I think if you're into horror, you need to embrace the camp. So, you know, when you watch these old horror movies, they're a little bit cringe. They got the rubber suits, they have the terrible effects. And these days, you'll still see some B movies that do this ironically, but modern horror is just, it just takes itself too seriously. That said, I love sci-fi and fantasy that has horror elements in it. So I'll put in a plug for Peter Watts's Blindsight, which is another square on your bingo card / drinking game every time I mention it, which has the coolest vampires ever committed to page. That's kind of the thing that people remember about it, is that the vampires in it are awesome. But it also doesn't get enough credit for taking this position on sentience that's just absolute cosmic horror, unadulterated nightmare fuel.
Yeah, I think that's probably why some people like things like Cabin in the Woods and Evil Dead. It's just, you can have a bit of fun, it's a bit of camp, and just enjoy yourself. So as a reader introduction, we've got our own background when it comes to what we liked as young people, as older people, like what we've read, our overlaps, where we overlap in taste. We're like to be open-minded. So for me, I just wrote down a few of the books. Dune is probably my favorite book of all time. The Hobbit, The Dark is Rising, The Day of the Triffids, Lord Valentine's Castle, Bloodhound, Beyond the Blue, Event's Horizon, Ender's Game, Game of Thrones. I read all five books. I've read every one of Robert J. Sawyer. Is my brother-in-law. I married my sister back in 1984. So I've read all of his novels, all 20, whatever, as a beta reader. He's one of my favorite authors. I like fantasy and science fiction. I like poetry because I've been doing poetry for a long time. Also, things like the Trilogy of Terror, Alien, Exorcist, Buffy, True Blood, and fantasy. So those are sort of my list. And I think you've got a list yourself.
Yeah, so my list, obviously, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which was my gateway drug into the genre. Ian M. Banks' The Culture, which is the utopia that I'd even prefer to live in over the Federation. Everything China Mieville has ever written. I even read his thesis on international law, which is not the most exciting read, but I'm a completionist. Ad Nostra, The Magicians, The Broken Earth series, The Dispossessed, everything Silvia Moreno Garcia has written, but especially Signal to Noise, which is criminally underrated. The Spear Cuts Through Water, The Memory Police, Severance, the book, but also the show, different entirely. They just have the same name. And This Is How You Lose the Time War. So I'm a little bit more specific on the types of fantasy that I like than the type of science fiction that I like. I'm really pretty much any science fiction, I will give it a shot. With fantasy, there's a couple subgenres that I'm less interested in. And I'm also less of a horror fan, although recently I read Gretchen Felker Martin's Manhunt, which absolutely won me over. It's a really gory splatterpunk novel that I think does have jump scares, but it's a book, so it didn't bother me. For a film teacher, I don't watch nearly enough movies, but I recently saw Godzilla Minus One, which was absolutely wonderful. I do binge watch TV, though. The Expanse, Doctor Who, and Andor are some of my recent favorite sci-fi. I am a certified poetry appreciator, TM, but don't expect me to write any ever. And then we were going to talk about ourselves as writers, because that's how we met. And that's kind of what we're here for as well.
Yeah. So for me, I'm a poet, been writing it since about 95. As a poet, I have 5 book length collections. I'm an Aurora Award winner. I'm a co-host of a podcast, Two Old Farts Talk Sci-Fi, with Troy Harkin. We're halfway through the 5th season. I'm a chair of the CISFA, which is CSFFA, the Canadian Science Fiction and Fantasy Association Hall of Fame. So I'm on the board. CISFA is the one that oversees the Aurora Awards. I'm a co-editor with my sister Carolyn of Amazing Stories, co-poetry editor, excuse me. I've appeared in Analog 5 times, Asimov 3 times. I write mainstream and speculative poetry. I've been a panelist at conventions for close to 30 years. My expertise includes Vogon poetry, Game of Thrones, The Walking Dead, Star Trek, and almost all its iterations, writing, humor, Battlestar Galactica, and many other things. I've hosted and organized a trivia contest at the CAG, which is the Klingon Assault Group annual feast. I'm the host, organizer, creator of the Dead Poet Society and Night of the Art Bar Poetry Series, which I've recently retired from. I'm also a punster and a poker player, so I think that's probably enough for one lifetime.
Wow. Okay, I am not nearly as decorated as that. But I haven't been at it quite as long. So I'm a novelist, a short story writer, and accidentally I wrote a cookbook co-wrote a cookbook, and that's the most successful thing that I've ever written. It was briefly Amazon's top-selling vegan and vegetarian cookbook. It's now banned from Amazon for absolutely no reason. I guess it was a little bit too spicy. Hoping by the time this goes to air, it'll be back up there. I'm a graphic designer. My specialty is book design, and I work in a number of genres, including sci-fi, fantasy. I haven't done any horror, but I would really like to. So if any aspiring horror novelists are out there and want a book cover, please hit me up. I've spoken on panels and given workshops about climate fiction, small press publishing, book design, and left-wing speculative fiction. And I'm the co-founder of the Night Beats Writing Collective that puts out a bunch of things, including the cookbook and at least one anthology.
Yeah, and I think you're also an expert in the Scrivener
and yes, a proponent I am, of it. I burst in like the Kool-Aid man into any related conversation and ask people if they've heard the good news about Scrivener. I love Scrivener. We should do an episode about writing software. And if anybody from the company is listening, yes, we will take a sponsorship. Thank you.
Absolutely. So I think part of it is that we looked on each other as kindred spirits that we both know and care about genre. And the other thing is we're also trying to cut down on snobbery and looking down on certain genres, or we're trying to open up understanding as well, because there was this one phrase that I had mentioned to Al Moritz, who I think is the best, is my favorite poet. I think he's one of the best in Canada. And I had mentioned to him that someone had told me years ago that I don't like poetry, but I like your stuff.
Oh, no.
This is something that I had. Yeah. And I'd received that a few times. I always thought it was a compliment, but then Al mentioned it to me is that that just comes from someone who doesn't read poetry. Or maybe someone says, you know, I don't like fantasy, for example, Rachel, but I like your story. Well, what this comes from is someone who doesn't read the genre, because there's a lot of great stuff, as you mentioned with China Mieville and others. There's just so many people who are such good practitioners that write amazing stuff. So if that person says that, you know, I don't like that genre, but I like what you write, well, it's because they haven't read other stuff, and there's great stuff out there. That's what I'm trying to say, sort of.
Mm-hmm. I find that with a lot of sci-fi fantasy fans, where it's, oh, it was better in the golden age. It was better when I was a kid. And no, it's not. There's way better stuff out there now. There's a ton of great stuff out there.
Yeah, and that always gets my back. That really bothers me more than it should. And I'm trying to be the person that doesn't overreact.
I couldn't agree more. And usually when people say things like that, my reaction is to just hit them with the recommendations. Yeah, for me, I think every genre has its cliches. So, you know, to wrap up a little bit, you can complain about technobabble and prologues and names that have 7 apostrophes for no reason in books that are 800 pages long, also for no reason. And then you also get people who will complain about literary fiction, about middle-aged literature professors having affairs with their 20-year-old students. But it's never really made sense to me to write off entire genres or entire eras. It's like, you don't get Star Wars without Hidden Fortress. I made my students marathon both movies recently. You have like this game-changing space opera film that draws its concepts, its visuals, quite a lot of its storyline from a 1950s samurai movie. And if, if Lucas had only stuck with his direct influences, like pulp sci-fi, like Flash Gordon, you don't get a movie that changes film. You just get a movie that's like the thing that it's copying. You know, a lot of what I read is literary fiction, and I think that it has a lot to offer sci-fi, fantasy, and horror. And especially like in commercial genre fiction, writing does get really self-referential. And I think that's actually the thing that people are complaining about. So, you know, up until you have probably like Tad Williams and more famously George R. R. Martin, but Tad Williams did it first, you have this entire cohort of epic fantasy writers who are ripping off Tolkien. And then there you got another cohort that's ripping off Tolkien's lesser imitators. And whatever you can say about Game of Thrones, like I have my critiques of it too. When it came out, it was doing something interesting, and it was like critiquing these ideals of like chivalry and black and white morality. And that was what fantasy novels were at the time. And I think like the first and probably the first few Game of Thrones novels were pretty revolutionary that way. Mm. So, you know, for genre writers, like what do we get from LitFit? Like we get experimental form, we get prose that sings, we get characters who screw up and lose, we get unreliable narrators, and you can actually lift something useful from any genre. So, you know, a lot of sci-fi, fantasy, horror geeks are completely snobbish about romance. Yeah, which I was guilty of too. Like, I'm not like the other girls. I'm not gonna read a Harlequin. But There's this entire subgenre of romanticy that's one of the best-selling subgenres out there right now. Romance is like this punchline. It's like country music where it's like a punchline for everybody except the people who like it. Then you get something like Good Omens Season 1, which just follows a romance formula beat by beat. The show's about the apocalypse, but the structure is like it's a romance movie. It works. You can't write off anything as below, as below you, as below your interest. There's something that you can learn from any type of literature, any movie.
One of the things, I think I mentioned to you before about how I really liked Shadow and Bone. Now, I saw this as a series as opposed to the books. And one thing, I always like grabbing quotes or finding things. And when I was watching season two, episode six, there's this quote where it says, "But you must understand what we do while we're alive, who we are, our truth. That is all we can control. That is all we have. Hiding who you are won't save you. We fight for what matters most to us." And it sort of almost feels like the Tolkien quote from, I think it might have been the first book, The Fellowship of the Rings. I think Gandalf said, "All we have to decide is what to do with the time that is given us." And these are great words because it talks about you're here right now. Don't be Eddard Stark. Don't be indecisive. Do something with your life. Make yourself glorious. Make yourself luminous. Write. Like I wish I had, when I was starting writing short stories back in my 20s, that I had actually kept at it and just worked on my work and just kept it going. And I'm trying to do that now. But there's a certain point where you have to decide what is important to you and to do it.
Yeah, and I think that's a really nice way to end off. There's another great Tolkien quote when he was somebody referred to fantasy as escapism, and he replied, "Of course it's escapist. That is its glory. When a soldier is a prisoner of war, it is his duty to escape and take as many with him as he can." I just think he got it. He got it. And I don't think that there was really anything that he would have looked down on, not as a genre writer, but as kind of the genre writer. So, David, do you have any pluggables? Where can people find you?
They can find me at a new website that was designed by a friend. It's David Livingston Clink, and Livingston has an E at the end, davidlivingstonclink.com. I'm still working on it or trying to populate it. I have a book that came out, The Black Ship, which I think came out in early November. So it's got about 40 poems. A number of them are, for those who are fans of science fiction, fantasy, and horror. Most of my books are not entirely because, probably like you, we just don't write that. We also may write some stuff that's what I call mainstream or doesn't have those kinds of elements to it. But that is available as well. So that's basically, I think, where I'm at. And how about yourself?
You can find me all over the place. I'm rachelrosen.ca. So that's my main website, Rachel with no extra A, not like the android in Blade Runner. I'm also at nightbeats.eu.ca, which is my writing collective. You can find me on Blue Sky at Darker Than Vanta. You can find me on Mastodon at You See a Tortoise at Wandering Shop. You can probably Google me and find a bunch of my stuff. Book-wise, I'm still really hoping that people check out Cascade. It's a couple years old now, but the sequel is on its way. So if you haven't read it, now's a good time. My latest story is in Instant Classic that no one will read, which is a collection of nine stories about publishing, the creative industries, deals with the devil, rogue AI, and the future of writing and creativity. So you can get those books wherever you find books. Try to use bookshop.org, not Amazon. Not a big fan of Amazon at the moment.
Yeah, and yeah, I did like that short story in Beyond Human, which was the first short story in that. And I think you have one, I guess, coming out from Ira. Ira has a collection coming out.
Yes, I do. It's called The Dance. I don't have a pre-order link for it yet, but it will be coming out soon. So watch this space. It's about an interdimensional art heist with two sad lesbians, a dodo, and Walter Benjamin having survived World War II. So it's a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to that being out as well.
Watch the skies.
Yeah. Until next time, watch the skies.
Wizards and Spaceships is a Nightbeats production. It's written and produced by David L. Klink and Rachel A. Rosen. Our theme music is by Rick Innes. You can find more of his music at Anything That Grooves on SoundCloud. Our logo is by Martin Knorr. See more of his work at Flower Prince Draws on Instagram. Our sound bites are from Pixabay. At least half of our dad jokes are by Rohan O'Doyle. You can find show notes, other episodes, and links to our other projects at wizardsandspaceships.ca.